It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Oh, my two favorite people are here, Baratunde Thurston and Brian Brushwood, to talk about the Facebook IPO, privacy on the net, the Susan B. Komen snafu, and a whole lot more. I'm wearing a scarf. You're watching TWiT next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 339, recorded February 5th, 2012, somewhere between murder and a messy room. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Collaborate face-to-face remotely with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code TWIT. And by Ice.com. Your path to a successful Valentine's Day this year begins with a TWIT-exclusive offer from Ice.com. 30% off your entire purchase, plus free guaranteed delivery. Get your big discount on fine jewelry now through February 10th at ice.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used electronic gadgets from your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. Gazelle your used gadgets today at gazelle.com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Leo Laporte here with two of my absolute favorite panelists on TWiT. In fact, I think this was the first time I met Brian Brushwood. I think Baratunde was here.
I think it was the second time. Second time, yeah.
But you two seem to go together like soup and sandwich, like a fish and a bicycle. It's great to have you.
Like a fish and a bicycle?
Yes. On the soup, to my left, Mr. Brian Brushwood, of course, host of Game On, NSFW, The BB Show, Frame Rate, anything I'm leaving out?
Scam School.
Scam School, of course.
Little thing there.
Revision 3, yeah.
Also BBC America. He hosts the whole thing now.
That's right. I'm the BB
just
in the BBC.
Every show.
BBC. Brian, great to see you. Thank you for being here. He's going to be doing Game On a little later.
Yes, absolutely.
Despite counter-programming from NBC, I think you'll do all right.
Us versus the Super Bowl, who are you going to watch?
I figured you're going to do like a Madden version of the Super Bowl where you play
Patriots
versus Giants.
Bam! I understand that sports ball is a very popular game. I'm looking forward to checking it out myself someday. Ball.
Actually, our British fans call it, say, we already have football. That's hand egg.
Do they call it hand egg?
There's no foot. You're carrying it, and it doesn't look like a ball. It looks like an egg. What are you, nuts? That's Baratunde Thurston, whose brand new book is out, and that's why he's touring the world.
Bam.
Teaching the world how to be black.
Hello. It's great to be back, Leo. It's really great to be back with Mr. Schwood. We got Schwood-a-tunde
action. You were just on MSNBC, on NPR with
CNN,
Terry Gross, CNN.
KGO.
You're just making it's great.
Permanent campaign. I'm like
there's
a politician.
A lot of interest in this book.
Yeah, people want to know about black stuff.
I'm kind of mad at you, though. I wore a scarf, and you didn't.
Yeah, but I am coordinated. My shoes.
Oh, at least your shoes
and
match.
And my Arsenal jacket are matching. Go Gunners.
Speaking of football, look at that. Arsenal. Yeah. That's awesome.
I do have to point out that this is an orchestrated plan. This is genius. Because it was in October. You came out to one of my live shows in Manhattan.
That's right.
And you were just like, well, I got a plan. Number one, How to Be Black will come out in February, Black History Month. And then you set up a street team. You got all these lieutenants setting all this stuff up for you. It is the most brilliantly orchestrated PR campaign. And the book is selling really well.
Well, this will be a measure of can you use social media, new media, to make a book take off?
Yeah.
You're using old media, too. You're pulling all the
No, it's a good partnership. I mean, Harper is my publisher. Yeah. They've been really good. And they've been good.
They get it.
They got me on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, who was one of my heroes.
And that's what they do.
And so we also have a Tumblr campaign, and we've been working with Tumblr.
What's the Tumblr site?
HowToBeBlack.me. We redirected our domain to Tumblr. And we're encouraging people to share their own stories.
You're partnering with them?
Not officially, but we talked to them. We said, like, they have a new partnership, initiative. They hired a woman named Rachel Fershleiser, who has a big history in books, and it's her job to kind of reach out to authors. So we talked to her.
That's smart.
Like, how can you use Tumblr without just trying to sell the book? Can you help sell an idea, make a community?
Well, and I think that's it's a real testament to Baratunde that he gets social media, because you can't astroturf this kind of thing. You have to have genuine love from the people who are part of your team.
Yeah, actually, no, I hate everybody. Just for the record, like, there's no.
But you can't fake it. You can't. No, I think you're right. I think that's what Brian is saying. This has to be a legitimate campaign among people who already have a community.
Yeah, it can still be orchestrated, but
it's orchestrated, but it is built on substance. The house is built on substance. Right. So we had a great launch timing with Black History Month, with a great title. You know, it's the cover works well. The early coverage was good. But people who've read it also actually like the book.
That helps.
And then the story, you know, the participation layer, even if you don't read the book, like, just go to this website and see what people are saying.
Right.
It's really heartfelt, funny, cool stuff about identity. And it's like not just Black people talking about it either. So,
you know, The Ouch has a great idea in our chat room.
The
he says,
Ouch.
Do an AMA and ask me anything on Reddit.
Oh, yeah. Have you not done that yet?
I wanted to. That was.
Like, I always wanted to ask Black people, you know. Like,
no, and then the thing is, on Brian Lehrer on WNYC last week, we did a version of that. It was kind of like a national Black
Press
conference.
I'm Black. Ask me anything.
Yeah. No, when people called in on the radio and they said, well, what do I do in this situation? What do I do in that situation?
Really,
the answer was always just.
Is it mostly white people, or did Black people call up too?
No, it was, I think, I'd have to go back on that show, but it was a very wide distribution.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't majority.
Would you show this? Would you say this is aimed at a Black audience?
I'd say it's aimed at a smart audience.
Oh, listen, this is how good he is.
Good answer.
That's so Baratunde of you.
I'm not the first person to have asked that, however.
No, it's on the FAQ. We have
FAQ. Yes, I know. I've got the whole PR
sheet right here. I'm going to say this for the record. Of all the things Baratunde is doing, my favorite is that he changed the end signature to say, buy How to Be Black or you're a racist.
Yeah, if you don't buy this book, you're a racist. It's pretty. I wanted to raise the stakes. I wanted there to be an actual cost.
So what is it about? I mean, as long as we're plugging the book, let's go ahead and plug the book. And what's it about?
The book is a memoir, mostly.
It's of your life.
Of my life, not a random person.
Well, I heard you reading on Fresh Air, and it's the very beginning of the book. You talk about your childhood.
Yeah, no, and I think the point is, I could have tried to do something that was very academic or extremely journalistic in terms of, like, reporting.
Right.
I wanted to do something that was based in the truth that I know, and the one I know most is my life. And it's one of the first lessons I learned in stand-up. Tell your truth. Stick to what you know.
Yes.
People can smell inauthenticity.
It's really true.
And that's true in social media. It's also just true in life.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me anchor this in what I know best, which is my life, which represents some of what I think is going on with identity and with race, which is that we're able to be more of, like, who we are. And to project who we are more loudly than we ever have before. We used to have other people telling us who we're supposed to be. Now we can combat that by just being ourselves.
I hope that. You know, and it's not just race. It's true. We're in a post-gender era, a post-sexual orientation era. It's true in a lot of different ways. The things that normally people were identifying with, I'm gay, I'm Black, I'm a man, I'm a woman, those lines are getting very much blurred.
And
I'm a woman, actually.
And I wouldn't, but I wouldn't go so far as to say we are post-gender or
gay
post-race. Because I don't think we're beyond it.
No.
But I think we can be smarter about it.
We can transcend it.
I think we can be more nuanced about it. I think we can be more honest about it. And I think humor is a cool way to play with it.
So this is a funny book, but a philosophy.
It's a funny, philosophical, personal book. And there's some lessons that are, the how-to is not a feint. There are a lot of chapters in there.
Really?
Based on my life.
Actual how-to?
About how-to.
Oh.
Like, here's what I learned.
I thought that was a joke.
It's like how to be the Black friend. Which is an important role. How to speak.
What is the Black friend? I know in movies there's a Black friend.
Yeah, and
he usually
TV
dies
shows
in the first act.
Yeah, the red shirt guy.
And it's probably not even a friend.
Yeah.
Probably just the Black person
always gotta be
in
the
frame who's, like, no longer present.
Right.
So that's where some of the, like, over-the-top satire comes from.
It's funny.
Yeah, man.
There's plenty to laugh at, God knows.
No, I wanted it to be funny because I wanted, you know, people sometimes come to this topic and they're defensive.
It's very
already
charged. Yeah.
And they're accusatory, which is kind of basically the opposite of defensive.
Right.
They're offensive. And you can never get to a point of actually exchanging an idea.
If this works, will you do another book on sex and religion? Because these are the taboo topics.
All
race,
things that
sex,
are taboo.
Politics, and religion.
Yeah. And they can all be served a little better by comedy than by, say,
I
sermonizing.
I think you're right.
And
Lenny Bruce was the first to observe that, right? He really broke boundaries.
Well, I wouldn't say he was the first, but I'd
say
he did it
really well.
Well,
I'm trying to think of a comic who really took those on earlier than that.
Well, I was doing research into, like, the history of satire. It goes all the way back. Horace wrote about this in Roman times.
All right.
And he said, he who badgers less can convince more.
Interesting.
And he talks about the value of humor in getting through tough topics and being able to talk to people.
Interesting.
So go Horace.
Yeah, go Horace. I guess Mark Twain is, it's true.
Yeah,
I mean, Huckleberry Finn's a good example of tweaking people's racial prejudices through a novel that had some humor in
it. Yeah.
So I guess you're right. I guess this does go back a while.
It does. Yeah. It's not always necessarily stand-up comedy. Certainly, it's always art is always played.
So what day did it come out?
January 31st.
Okay. Last day of January, first day.
That was a setup day.
And then you've been out just 5-6 days now.
Yeah.
And it's going well?
Though? We hit number 20 on Amazon.
All right.
And like all That's books. Awesome. And then Amazon ran out of books.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there.
That's a great list of problems. That's got to be the best one.
The publisher's reprinting more.
Awesome. So you're already in the second
demand.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, this weekend, Baratunde Day.
Yeah, no, you know, every time Baratunde is here, I just want to talk to him
because
he's so interesting and fun.
We should talk about
that. Saw you at Mac World. You were hustling down the street as I was leaving our Mac World
meetup. Yeah, we just bumped into each other on the street. Yeah. In fact, it was thanks to a Twitter, Marcus, what was his name? I wanted to give him an appropriate thank
you. He had been bringing me drinks.
Yeah, trying to get you drunk.
But it was all water, so fortunately.
Because you had to drive.
So everybody's asking, and I might as well tell everybody, yes, Baratunde recorded the Audible version.
Yeah, I did. I do the voiceover myself. Voice is important. I mean, I'm using SoundCloud and a daily podcast to talk about.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm doing a daily like tour cast, I'm calling it, to just give people the download of like what's it like behind
the
scenes.
You, man, he's got the perfect system.
He's working it.
I am taking notes,
dude. No, and I just so people know, this isn't a setup. I did go to Brian's. Like, I've admired your hustle on stage and how you do your shows. And I went to Brian's show at Manhattan College. And I took notes.
Yeah, you
I
did.
I literally took notes. I followed up. I'm like, so you have these big banners at your show.
Right.
Brian does this great thing at his shows, which is talk about audience engagement, where he's got questions and quizzes and little videos while he's
pre-show,
setting
up. Like when you go to a movie theater.
Yeah.
The idea, the whole reason that came from, and we should talk about tech at some point.
No, I mean, he uses computers to do it, tech.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. The whole idea was most of the places I go, nobody has any idea who I am.
Yeah.
And the problem is, whatever people are expecting at a magic show, it's not me. So I walk out with this ridiculous hairstyle,
right.
and I would get laughter the moment I walked out. So the idea
That's what happened when I dressed up as you the other day.
Well, by the way, I saw that. That was freaking awesome. Brian Gottwood and Faux Ronica. That's right.
Yeah, we were testing the mics for tonight, and
they
were good.
Yeah.
All right.
But the idea with the pre-show was to program people, let them know who I was, and get them thinking about magic in general. And I guess you stole that. Sure.
Yeah, it's a view source world.
Right.
So I just viewed source on your show.
So Facebook.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. I'm not done. SoundCloud.com/Baratunde.
Yeah, man.
Actually, we're talking to SoundCloud about using them because I like for our player on our page because you could put comments in the in the waveform, which I think is really good.
No, I ran into Alex, who's one of the founders.
They have good outreach.
Last week, and he reminded me, you know, people are using SoundCloud like this and like that. Now on the fly, I was like, you know,
I always think of it as a music service, but you can use it for spoken
word. And the apps are light enough; they're on Android and iPhone. So I'm doing.
I use it too. Yeah,
the cab.
Yeah. But I've been using Audioboo as well, but this is a great solution. And then the book, How to Be Black, is on audible.com, narrated by Baratunde, 6 hours and 27 minutes. Were you a little disappointed? Did you think it was going to be 9 hours?
No, I think the length is good because I think you can like finish it in a week and move on with your life. I didn't want to
commute.
Some huge epic thing.
Satisfied.
But it's the most accurate version of the book because I caught some typos while I was reading.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Here, let's listen to a little bit just to see if it sounds like it.
Buying season for postage stamps. Featuring noteworthy black Americans by a factor
of 4.
Sounds
exactly like him. Sleepy.
It's amazing. What a good impression there.
Yeah, the guy that they got was really good. He shadowed me for 34 years. And got every nuance of my voice down.
So I think we've given you a pretty big plug.
I think you've given more than I could ever even ask for.
Like, I'm sorry, I got to catch my flight. It's been great,
Thank
gentlemen.
You, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good discussion, Brian.
But I did look at the stories, and I would love to talk about
Thank
tech.
You. Thank you. Well, let's talk about you brought it up, Brian. Facebook this week filed for their public offering, as expected. What we didn't know until they filed was how much money they were looking for. And apparently it's $5 billion.
With a pinky at the corner of your
mouth. $5 billion. Yeah. But they could have filed for more. $5 billion is 5% of the company because the company's valued at $100 billion, according to this. So they're not giving up a huge amount of stock.
Yeah.
Is it worth, they had revenue, is it worth $100 billion? They had revenue last year, according to their filing, of $3.7 billion. Income, $1 billion. That's the profit. $1 billion a year. Are they worth 100 times profit?
Yes.
You know, if you put it that way, it's harder than you say. Then I can ask you the same question. Would you buy Facebook stock? Yes.
And I guess that's a good point.
It's when you put it, is it worth 10 to 100 times your value?
Here's the problem. Part of it is that you're betting on future value. Mm-hmm. And everything they're doing, they're getting an unprecedented amount of personal data in order to serve an unprecedented...
unprecedented. Unprecedented is a good word.
So I got to tell you, I even though, you know, $1 billion to being valued at $100 billion, I honestly just don't know how to feel about this because it's so familiar to watching MySpace. I remember listening to,
that's the problem.
To This Week in Tech, and I remember John C. Dvorak saying, markets are fickle, and this is a fad.
Markets are fickle.
There you go.
That's what he said.
kids, they're gonna go to the next thing.
I'm a big fan of our cut. That's the next big thing.
He might well have said that. I don't know.
And I can't decide which is stronger, the impulse to think that this is so similar to the MySpace experience and that it could go somewhere else, or the fact that Facebook is so damn sticky.
Yeah.
People will discover stories that are weeks old on Facebook, whereas on Twitter, it's all ephemera.
We all know that because we all cross-post to Google+, Twitter, mm-hmm. Facebook, every other. And it's always Facebook for me. And is it true for you that gets the most comments?
Yeah, so it's
the longest?
It's a recent change for me in Facebook. So Twitter is my primary social digital home. Google+ was going super strong for a while, but has really tapered off in many ways for me. Facebook, I changed my world there where I killed my page. I had a fan page.
I don't use it anymore.
I went to their subscriber model.
Turn on the subscribers.
Which allows for like unidirectional connectivity.
Which, by the way, I feel totally betrayed because I used the migration tool to go to a public page and then they opened up the subscriber model.
This is Facebook's way of life. We get you to do one thing, then we go, ha!
And they yank and change. It's like UFOs with the harsh directions that a man made.
But I have to say now, I have.
Wow, that really exploded.
Come on,
that
just
work. Just
it's go.
Exactly, yes, Facebook
it's just
is exactly
UFO
like a UFO.
Flight patterns, because my point is when you watch.
It's zigzagging in an untenable way.
Thank
yes,
you.
Exactly.
You know where I was going with this.
I'm sorry, I betrayed you.
But here's another point about Facebook.
Hey, can we get some whiskey for these guys? They're clearly a little. Go ahead, you keep talking. But I'm going to run and get the whiskey.
My point on the Facebook thing, I'm with you, Brian, in terms of like the unknowable nature of the future, but it is so much deeper. But almost a billion users, and the level of media that people are sharing is so much more than we got in the MySpace era.
I think also that Facebook now has a long history, and I'm glad they waited so long to file the APO. They have a long IPO.
Yeah.
They have a long history.
Aggressive public offering.
Buy our stuff.
Or
buy
we'll physically
now.
Kill you.
Or we'll delete your baby pictures. You won't exist.
I think they've shown a really good ability to continue to adapt in order to offer new services better. I mean, as much as you hear people complaining about bring back old Facebook, nobody wants old Facebook.
No,
it's clear
and
that
timelines.
Whoa,
it's
now
actually,
the booze is here.
It's really nice. I like Timeline a lot. More than I thought I would.
I just saw a survey that says 75% of Facebook users hate it.
Yeah, but 90% of them don't know anything. You know, the people will get over it. Just like, you know, the Flickr users got over the thing.
Any change is unpleasant.
So I think that's an initial change is bad. People don't like change, but they'll accept it.
Well, and I have to say, I have a tenth the number of subscribers on Facebook that I have on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I get at least 10 times the interactivity.
Well, and their ability to tune. This is what we don't see. The algorithms that show your subscribers what ends up in their feed is getting better.
Right.
Is getting smarter. And they prioritize certain things. I noticed as a light example, if I share a Foursquare check-in with Facebook, that is one set of behaviors. If I share a Foursquare check-in as a photo attached, order of magnitude more. Because they now auto-import, and I think this is the way Foursquare is using the API, but they pull in the photo and add it to a photo album. And so people are actually commenting on the media, and Facebook rewards native posting of media versus linking to things off of Facebook.
So one more thing, and it really is kind of deja vu to 4 years ago talking about MySpace and Facebook to begin with. The only reason to not assume that Facebook is worth $100 billion is if you perceive that somebody could steal this away from them, because that is what happened with MySpace. MySpace got the feet cut out from underneath them, and they essentially went to nothing. And is there – talking about Google+, right?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of how you feel about the – execution of Google+, I think it's obvious that Google wants to own this space And that's I'm convinced that's why they made the entire privacy policy change, is so essentially they're making all of Google, if you have one account on any of their services, now you're a Google Plus subscriber.
Right.
It's been that way for a while.
Right.
Right.
Right. But is this going to be a case where it's a Facebook destroying MySpace, or is it going to be a case of a Coke and a Pepsi where both can exist in harmony?
By the way, I'm going to take that picture of my son in his underwear off. I didn't realize.
That is a weird segue, man. Like,
well, this is the problem with Facebook. I'm deleting that right now. I didn't.
Is it
realize.
A problem with Facebook or the problem with Leah?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
So I don't necessarily.
The question, though, let's get back to the question.
Yeah. Is it worth?
Is it worth?
If this company is able to take the level of user engagement, media sort of immersion and life layering that they're attempting to do and add transactions, financial, commercial transactions on top of that and own a piece of a lot of those, if they can not let you just share your photos but share in the transactions that you're being social throughout, the way you find right. your commercial experiences and transactions, the food you buy, the clothes you shop for, and take a cut of that by improving those recommendations or allowing you to sell on that platform or getting to the virtual goods and games world as they have been, then that opportunity could be much, much greater.
Well,
than
you're,
the proposed
you're proposing
value
ways for them to monetize, but I think that there are many, 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 many possible mm-hmm. ways to monetize. So really the only question is, they've got 850 million users.
Yeah.
Are they worth $118 per user based on all the various ways, maybe the ones you recommend, yeah. but there may be others to monetize? Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whether they can execute it,
yeah.
Well,
uncertain.
And
but
that's,
the potential
that's really what you're
is,
betting on.
Is bigger than that.
Can they? Because really, and this is, I think we said this last week, is no question that they're getting to the end of the line on how many users they can have, because we're right. running out
of internet users.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
there is, but it's also the case that they've only scratched the surface of monetization.
Yeah. Right.
They have, Mark Zuckerberg, I think very wisely, has pulled the reins back on monetization, mm-hmm. has said minimal monetization. Don't junk it up. And that's a hard thing to do. And he's done it for 8 years. He's held that horse back. And now when they do the IPO, whoosh,
yeah. Well, and not all of these are evil uses when it comes to the advertising. Think about it in terms.
No,
and
not
I love,
at all.
I love this idea of $118 per user.
I wish I could delete this picture of my son in his underwear, though.
Like the $118 per user is a perfect idea, because there are you hear the stories about Google AdWords where yeah. people are paying upwards of $50 to $100 per click for certain key terms like cancer or mesothelioma or mm-hmm. whenever there's
right.
So imagine you complain that you just came down with mesothelioma, and then all of a sudden you get an ad from there's going to be a legal firm out there that's going to pay $100
right.
just for the one display ad of yeah. like, hey, do you right. want to sue?
I changed my relationship status to single on here. You wouldn't believe the number of dating sites for men over 50
really?
Suddenly showed up in my stream. I mean, it really was kind of scary.
Man, the more I'm thinking about this, the more I'm thinking like $118 per user doesn't even get close.
Nothing.
There's
a,
I think there's a massive value
nothing.
Over the long term.
There's a fun game, I would say sort of a social hacking experiment that a woman named Teresa Valdez-Klein pulled off a while ago, where she bought Facebook ads to basically counter the negative messaging that women were getting.
I love that
from
idea.
Facebook ads.
Why not?
Some of these ads were like, do you think you're fat? Do you wish you were prettier?
Right.
Are you lonely, 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 right. lonely, lonesome face?
Belly fat.
And so she would buy ads targeted at women saying, you're beautiful the way you are.
Mm.
Don't worry about this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa Valdez-Klein, it's worth Googling. I'll see if we can dig up the link at some point, maybe during one of the breaks, and at least post it to the chat room. But it was a great way of kind of using their ad system, which actually leans on some of the stereotypes and bad messaging and sort of more obvious ways to lure people. And she said, let's play it a little smarter and a little more fun. I wish I'd come up with it myself.
It's brilliant.
What she did. She gave an Ignite talk about it.
That's such an internet way to handle things, too.
No, it is. It's a nerdy, like, nerd activism, nerdivism.
You know, it's right? funny, though. So I've gone to Teresa's Facebook timeline. And what ads do I see? Do you like beautiful women? View pics of profiles of pretty women.
Mature American women.
Senior
people meet. You're locked
hello,
in, aren't you?
I am forever going to be seniorpeoplemeet.com.
For some reason, I want to think of it as like senior people
right.
meet.
Let's have some whiskey. Now, I brought some bourbon out. This is Blanton's Kentucky Straight. I got your Bullet. This is the small batch Bullet 95 rye we had last time you were here. But I think you're a Glengoyne. I don't have any Macallan. I know you like the Macallan. And look at these glasses, by the way, the RCA. These are nipper glasses. Which would you prefer there? I'll let you pour your own.
Oh, my goodness.
You be your own bartender while we take a break.
This.
Let's get Phoronica out here because we're going to do an ice.com commercial.
By the way, the video is called Subvertising. If you want to search YouTube for
I'll do it. In fact, we'll find it and play
it a little bit. It's an Ignite Talk, the art of subvertising on Facebook.
Don't you love Ignite? Have you done Ignite Talks?
Oh, yeah. I've done two Ignite Talks.
So how many slides?
There's
20 slides, 15 seconds each.
5 minutes.
So you get a total of 5 minutes. Yeah. The slides are auto advance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You've never done this?
No.
This is the Twitter of
TEDx presentation.
No, there's so much fun you can do. And so the timing is really important. Most of these, you can learn amazing things. I saw someone talk about social networking within .gov. And about how the FBI and all these firms are trying to do.
Brilliant.
Hillary Mason at Bitly, their chief scientist, gave a really fantastic talk.
I love them.
She just smart, smart.
I think Ignite is, if you ever get a chance to go to Ignite a presentation,
because
they move
fast. Well, they're part of a lot of existing conferences.
Right.
And they're sort of licensed around the world. They happen in Austin, I'm sure.
Ignite Austin.
If I'm ever in Austin, I'll make sure to check it out.
But tell your family to go.
Yeah.
So it's time to talk a little bit about ICE, and we've got Phoronica here, who is our ICE model. Actually, we have the real Veronica, but so let me talk a little bit about what ICE is. ICE is, we've mentioned it before, it's our jewelry store. And they know that the best way to get new customers is to go to geeks, mostly guys, who have no idea what they're going to do for Valentine's Day. Can I help you? Can I help you? Your path to a successful Valentine's Day this year begins with a special TWIT offer from ICE.com. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready for this. 30% off.
What?
Free guaranteed delivery. You've got to order through February 10th at ice.com/twit. Now, Phoronica, do you have the ice?
I don't. I bet you have it.
I don't have the ice.
Almost perfectly executed.
So good. That was so close.
I don't
so
have
close.
The ice. So she's going to go get the ice.
Deal.
Here's the website.
Who stole the ice?
There's a ton of wonderful stuff here, and we're going to help you in a little bit. This 30% off anything you see on this site. It's site-wide. There is no minimum purchase. It includes free shipping. 30% off when you go to ice.com/twit, and they have a great guide. And by the way, shop for her, or if you want to know what women really want, shop for me. You go there, and your gal can set up what she wants.
Oh, she can make
a wish list. That's what I always do. You know, do you have it? Do you have it there?
I have a couple.
All right. Lisa, my gal's going to bring in some ice here. Look at this.
That's my favorite. It's
this is your favorite? Now, tell me about this, Lisa, because we got to know what we're looking at here.
If you flip the
By the way, she's silly. She's wearing a 49ers shirt. You know it's over for them.
I do, but I don't
Can't
have
Can't she dream? Can't she dream?
Oh, you're a Giants fan, I'm guessing. Dream.
For this game, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a Giants fan for this game, but for I have no attire.
So look at this. Now, do I have the information
you
on
do.
This?
That's shiny. If you flip the page.
Okay, here it is. So this is the
real-time advertising.
Half-carat diamond.
Watch your head there.
Yeah, don't get your head in the shot. Yeah. This is the half carat 10K. Don't get the booze in the shot either. White gold heart pendant with chain. $595 with a TWIT Valentine's Day price, $416. That's beautiful, isn't it? And a heart is so romantic. People love it when you give them a heart. How about, all right, you want a little color? How about this? This is a white and blue sapphire sterling silver bracelet. That is just gorgeous. It's already very affordable, $195. You add the TWIT discount, $136.
Well, this is different. This is an amethyst and blue topaz white gold.
They just sent us this to play with. Look at that. That
it's
is cool.
So
give me your
story.
Hand. Give me your hand. Put that on.
I thought you were asking me for a second. I was going to get uncomfortable.
Get your head out.
Here
you go.
To get my head out.
That is pretty.
Yes.
That is gorgeous. Keep that on because they didn't apparently send that to us.
They did.
It never arrived.
They did.
It didn't ever arrive. She doesn't get
it,
does she? They never.
He is stealing the jewelry
arrived.
And gifting it to you.
Anyway, it never arrived. ICE.com/twit. Actually, at these prices, amazing. 30% off site-wide, free shipping. Guys, you've got till February 10th to make sure that it comes in time for Valentine's
Day. Take your time. February 9th, freak out.
Midnight.
You're gonna do it anyway.
It's really, that's how I do it. I always wait till
the last. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome.
Enjoy. Do I get some? What are we having today? Somebody put the cork in there. You know, I have one that is not corked if you want.
It's already poured it. It's okay.
Is it okay?
Yeah. It doesn't taste like whiskey's stronger than cork.
I don't have. Yes, it is. I don't have the Macallan. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I know you're a Macallan fan.
It's all right.
Thank you.
So is it just me or like whenever whenever I know I'm going to be on Twit, I read the tech news every single day. I'm like, come on, big story. Come on, knife fight at Apple.
It's
come on,
slow right now.
You know, and it's like I guess really Facebook is the biggest story. And it's like I mean I guess we'll just wait and see.
Did you read Nick Bilton's great article in the Times about this IPO? For instance, Sheryl Sandberg, COO. But she didn't join. She already was worth almost half a billion from Google.
Right.
But she didn't join Facebook till a couple of years ago. Her stock worth at a $100 billion valuation, about $38 million.
Wow.
But wait.
There's more.
You know what I'm going with.
I don't, but I just like to say there's more.
In the early days of Facebook, they had a guy come in to paint the wall, a graffiti artist.
Oh, yeah. This is a great story.
They couldn't give him cash. They said, would you take a little paper?
Yeah.
His stock for one wall... $200 million.
But it wasn't, but here's the deal, guys. It was a wall. And we all know Facebook is predicated on the wall. So I think there's a little more symbolism going on there.
Okay, but this is one of those things where I have an emotional short circuit. I can't decide if I'm angry that somebody's getting $200 million for painting a wall, or if I'm happy.
You're happy.
If I were Zuck, I might be a little angry. Now, he has, his stock is worth... He's got, I think, 38% of the value. 28?
Yeah.
So his stock is worth $28 billion.
Right.
By the way, at the going-off price, it could be worth the following day, 3, 4, 5, 10 times.
I want to go back to this idea of the painter. You just reminded me of someone I met last week, and I'll try to dig it out again. My mind's a little slow on the name, but the idea was they're trying to encourage entrepreneurs to give 1% of their equity. It's like 1% of nothing.
That's a great idea.
To charities of their choice.
That's a wonderful
idea. And so there's a guy from Boulder whose company did really well, and he was able to finance. You know, they're like, sure, they didn't even know what it meant. Sure, we'll accept your worthless stock paper.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And then he had an exit from his company, and they got 1% of a big number.
That's
and it
really
changed
nice.
That nonprofit's ability
That's
to affect
really
the
nice
community.
Story.
And so the idea
And he never felt the pinch.
No, 1% of nothing.
Yeah, sure,
right?
Sure.
So if you do well, then it's great. If you don't, then it's nothing.
That's awesome.
And so the idea that this artist got a little percent
it's
of
not
nothing,
unusual, actually. I know, you know there's
a beautiful thing.
A PR firm in San Francisco called the Antenna Group that during the dot-com boom was taking stock in lieu of payment for her PR services. She's done quite well,
yeah.
As you might imagine. I think that's not a bad way to go. How many millionaires do we know will emerge from this IPO? Many.
I mean, I don't know them.
Remember the masseuse at Google, who was hired in the early days of Google.
Matt Galligan.
Was worth, I think, several hundred million.
Amazing. Yeah, we heard those. I remember, you know, I guess it's a familiar tale by now. When I first got my start at Dell, it was during Dell's meteoric rise. And they were talking about how, like, they wouldn't say you ought to buy as much as you can of the employee stock purchase program. Mm. Let me put it this way. My secretary is worth $2 billion.
Her name is Bonnie Brown. She was a part-time massage therapist at Google. When there were 40 employees, she was offered a part-time job, $450 a week, but it included stock options.
Yeah.
She's now worth many, many millions of dollars and has a 3,000-square-foot house. Gets her own massages once a week, has a private Pilates instructor.
No, it dramatically changes what you can do. And so if you can take some of this explosive growth, because this is the exciting part of our economy, right? This is innovation's happening here.
Yeah.
Talent's being recruited here. The big hockey stick in growth is here. You throw people who wouldn't have access to this behind that by giving them a little piece, put organizations behind that.
Don't you
cool.
think this is going to threaten, though, the success of Facebook? Because...
What's going to threaten the success of
stories like this?
No.
Helping people?
A couple of things.
Yeah.
Remember,
people ruins Facebook.
Steve Jobs, actually, it was Bill Gates, I think, for a long time, did not want Microsoft to go public because he was very afraid that their employees would, who all had options.
It changes their incentives.
That they would, and you see this happen in startups. They've got little apps that sit on their desktop, and they're watching their value all the time. Not coding.
Right.
Not sticking to business, but watching their value.
I don't think
all
you can separate that because the passion with which so many people work so long in this was predicated on an eventual exit. So it's not like this is actually a change. This was the guarantee that they were counting on this happening at some point.
You have
people
to do this.
People have slaved away for the possibility of making nothing, for the likelihood of making nothing.
That guy,
the possibility of making a lot.
He worked on that wall for days.
Yeah.
knowing.
Well, by the way, that organization is called 1% of Nothing. And the guy was thinking of Matt Galligan, who did Simple Geo.
I love that idea.
So when they got acquired, this Boulder nonprofit made a ton of money. Yeah.
In this story right now, we know obviously why Facebook is going public. It makes perfect sense. And everyone wants their payday for all the hard work they put in for the last, 8, 9 years. But there is also, there are other stories of very successful companies that get on the edge of filing an IPO and decide it's not worth it. For example, a friend of mine is an engineer over at SAS in North Carolina.
Okay.
And
great company.
They went through all the preparations and figured out, like, once we stop owning everything, we can't spoil our employees with these treats. And because when you have to answer to a board, they're like, why did you give everyone a $10,000 gift for X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, and of course, none of us are on the inside, but it'd be interesting to see how the corporate culture changes inside of Facebook.
Right. Right.
Post IPO.
Yeah. We'll watch it.
Yeah. We'll watch. We'll watch from the outside. Me and Baratunde behind the hedge. Anything different? I don't know.
So,
I also think Mark's going to lose some control. And I think that that might be bad for Facebook. I think Mark has had so much control up to now. I worry a little bit about a Facebook that is a little bit more traditional in its structure. He still has. Majority, he has 3 out of 5 board seats. He has 60% of voting shares. So he still has absolute control. But things change. Yeah. Things change.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Lori Andrews writing in the New York Times yesterday, Facebook is using you.
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's the
premise.
Newsflash. Also, the sky is blue.
What's her? I mean, she obviously
this
has
just
more
in. What's up with gas prices?
Facebook.
What's behind the headline?
Makes money by selling ad space to companies that want to reach us.
Scandalous.
If you indicate you like cupcakes, live in a certain neighborhood, and have invited friends over, expect an ad from a nearby bakery.
Can I? I'm going to try to use this. You let me know if this is not cool as an opportunity to jump to a related story.
Please do.
And that's Google and privacy.
Yeah, well, it's the same story.
It's the same threads here about user behavior, to ad targeting, and the rights and responsibilities that we have.
So think about this. I expect this to be some story that'll break in the next 5 years, just as a prediction. Remember this moment, everyone, because I'm reading in the Plex and I'm reading about the way Google handles stuff without understanding a language. It knows what words are associated with certain things and is able to predict what you mean in Norwegian through translation software. For example, on Facebook, there could be a type of situation where they start to see the things that are associated with having an affair or something like that, where all of a sudden you never say anything, but they know.
They just know.
And then they start serving up ads for Ashley Madison.
Boy, that explains
a
lot.
I think we just had a moment.
That's not where I've been saying
this. Wow.
But like that, I expect
Bring
something
back the ice.
Like that.
Bring back the ice. She makes a very good point, and it applies both to Google and Facebook.
Yeah.
It's redlining. It's social redlining. Now, this is something that happened to people of lower income. Banks would not lend money to people in certain geographic areas. They redlined because those people were lower income. Actually, kind of in the reverse in the modern era. Those are the people they targeted with extra low loans and subprime loans. But in any event, that was how the banks used that kind of information. She calls it – by the way, she's the author of a book called I Know Who You Are and I Saw What You Did, Social Networks and the Death of Privacy.
I got to get that lady out of my life.
Lori Andrews.
I know what you are. Where are you?
So she calls this weblining. Data aggregation has social implications.
Yeah, go ahead.
When young people in poor neighborhoods are bombarded with advertisements for trade schools, will they be more likely than others their age to forego college?
Mm.
When women, and this is what Teresa was talking about, when women are shown articles about celebrities rather than stock market trends, will they be less likely to develop financial savvy? Advertisers, this is actually a very interesting point.
It is.
Has nothing really to do with Facebook, except that by aggregating information that they know about you with the kinds of ads they want to give you, they might in some way be kind of training you to be a certain kind of person.
Yeah.
Advertisers are drawing new red lines, limiting people to the roles society expects them to play. This is a kind of another form of Eli Pariser's filter bubble.
No, it is. It's that. It's what Dana Boyd writes and talks about to some degree. And it's the flip side of the consumer choice argument that so much ad targeting is about, which is, hey, isn't the world better when you don't see ads that aren't relevant to you? Wouldn't you rather see an ad for something that coincides with your interest than something far
unless it reinforces stereotypes about the kind of person you are.
Yeah, if it limits
you're
who you
black,
think you can
we're going to advertise Courvoisier to you. That's all you're allowed to drink. You can't have whiskey.
that is the end of my life right there. You just painted a sad future.
No,
but
really, seriously, that creates a more uniform society, a society that people live up to their stereotypes.
Here's what I would argue for.
That's not what we want.
Part of the challenge is the people. We live in an age where all these tech and all this data is available, and we can build more intelligent services on top of that. The people at the forefront of this are the marketers and the advertisers, but who we already know what their interest in us is.
They just want to make money.
It's not a peer relationship. They're not trying to make you feel better about yourself or expand your range of human possibility. Right. They want to make you buy their stuff.
But
if we could balance that scale a little bit. So, for example, all the data that AT&T has, that Google has, that the iPhone has, why can't it be as easy for me to synthesize and analyze that data and make empowering choices as it is for them to tell me who they think I should
be? Can I play the role of the advertiser here and the marketer and just give you the argument? My job is not to create a better society. Mm-hmm. My job is to serve advertisements that are going to be effective.
Yep.
So if I have information about you that all my research says will help me target you with a more effective ad, you're telling me, oh, no, salt that effective ad with some ineffective ads just to give you a choice in your life?
It's what
BS.
I'm not going to expect different behavior from them. What I'm saying and suggesting is more power for the user. For example, example.
Okay.
My usage patterns of my mobile phone and the data plans and the pricing I have are not optimal. They do not result yet in me having the optimal
package.
And
they could be.
They could. All the information is
there. By
the
way, we got a new advertiser that's going to help you do that.
Where my phone is, how much I use it, when I turn it on and off.
This is coming later this month. We've got a new advertiser that does exactly that.
I could save hundreds of bucks a year.
This is the big data era where now with all the data that we know, you could actually be more refined. Maybe that's what's really going on.
But not even that. Let's go further. Let me take all that data about your corporation, about where you give campaign money to, about how you treat your employees, and let me decide where that dollar is going to go. It's a very unidirectional power play right now with the people with the money and the data are telling you who you're supposed to be.
So you're saying, obviously marketers aren't going to change their attitude.
So, but we can change. We should demand more change.
I guess that's the thing is I don't expect marketers to do anything different.
No.
But the technology that makes it possible for the marketers is also the technology that makes something like Google News possible. Mm-hmm. Google News has been my number one homepage for the last three or 4 years.
Congratulations.
But what I love about it is that it forces me to see articles that I never in a million years would seek out, you know?
That's the counter argument to the filter bubble. That's what Eli Pariser says. And we only read news that agrees with our opinions, and I agree with you that ultimately this is much more broadening than it is narrowing.
Right.
I would say that when we look at money in politics, for example, we've seen a lot of reports this past week about these super PACs and who's giving money for all the various campaigns or not quite campaigns. The trade-off we made in this country is, okay, money speaks, money is speech, sure. Transparency balances it. We know who's money.
Same thing with journalists, tech journalists who take money
right now,
from companies.
All the transparency being offered in this data-driven world is of the user toward the service provider. They know where we are. They know what our devices are doing. They know what buttons we're pressing. Can we, know all that about ourselves? Because it is us generating that value in that data. It's technically our data. And can we know more about these organizations and demand more of that transparency?
It's a two-sided thing because you generate that data regardless, whether just by virtue of living and being interested in
that's
things.
That's the data stream, the smog.
That's the life stream.
Exactly.
Comes off of
you. So does it affect you in any way that some business comes along and picks up all this data that you're sloughing off all over your body and you're like, hey, man, this is valuable. I mean, is it the case where you're like, well, go ahead and make money with it, or you're suddenly indignant? You're like, hey, no, I want that data to just be lost and useless.
I think it changes the nature of the data when it's no longer just passive activity and data, but it's insight and analysis and conclusions being drawn about you as a person.
So I think what you're really saying is that
level of intelligence and thought added to the data makes it a little different.
What you're really saying is that
they shouldn't do it, but I'm saying it's no longer just data anymore.
Web lining is really just because they're doing it imperfectly. They're assuming from a few data points that you are a certain kind of person. But given better information, they're not going to assume just because you live in a certain neighborhood or just because you buy a certain car or just because, they're going to know more about you and give you ads that are actually, in fact, tailored to you.
I think
this is maybe where
Pariser's work comes in, and I haven't read his whole book yet. I only saw some of the TED talk he did. But even in a perfect data world, which is impossible, but you can get closer to it, and they're more accurately tracking and representing these people, there is some loss in society of only having a targeted experience. If the experience of all the media in your life, of all the ads in your life, of all the commercial messages and social cues is only reinforcing what that world thinks you are, you're missing the serendipity, you're missing the magic, you're missing the contrast.
Well, thank God we still have the Super Bowl. I mean, that is, well, seriously, the ads you're going to watch in the Super Bowl are aimed at 100 million people. They're not aimed at you or me. They're aimed at 100 million people. They're as broad a brush as you can get. And people are still willing to spend millions of dollars on those ads.
Right.
They must work.
So the idea of all of us living in bubbles, it's almost like a, I don't know if this is too weird a metaphor, but it's almost like the prisoner's dilemma where it's like you personally, there's no reason you shouldn't want all of your ads to be targeted. There's no reason you shouldn't want all your news to be targeted. But if everybody does it, if everybody defaults on the prisoner's dilemma, society as a whole totally becomes extra polarized and we all lose as a result.
Game theory says it's flops.
Exactly.
Let's go even further, though.
These guys are way too smart.
Let's ask.
I'm going to have some more whiskey.
And again, even in a perfect data world where the ads are genuinely targeted based on 100% knowledge of the bits that comprise your body and your life, do we want to live in a world where advertising dominates the experience so much?
We already do.
But do we want to?
Philip K. Dick. No, we can't. We can't possibly.
Philip K. Dick wrote a great
thing. There is something perverse about a totally sales-driven world.
There's something honest about admitting that we've always lived in a totally sales-driven world.
Now we've reached our moment, Brian. Let's do it.
All right, we're going to take a break. What a great discussion. Baratunde Thurston is here. His new book is called How to Be Black. You can find more at, what's the best site to go to?
HowToBeBlack.me.
Got it. HowToBeBlack.me. Brian Brushwood is the host of Scam School on Revision 3.
I'm writing a book. The Scam School book.
You should write a book. You've written books.
I have. I wrote The Professional's Guide to Fire Eating and a couple others, but we're about 80% done on the Scam School book.
Are you really?
Yeah. We're probably going to try to do a targeted strike. See, whereas you get people to buy your book by being engaging and having people love you, I plan to cheat. And we're going to target March 1st is the day. I want everybody to buy it on that exact day, and I'm going to price it stupidly low. So for one hilarious moment, I could be like the number one book on Amazon.
Nice. You'll bomb it.
Exactly.
That's a really interesting
strategy.
It's
like the money bomb of
that's where the idea came from.
I would like to point something out. We are all selling something, if not a book or a product or a bottle of whiskey. You're selling yourself. Yep. You're selling it to an employer. You're selling yourself as an employee. So I think this distinction between marketers and regular people is a little artificial. Everybody's selling something. And really, life itself is about enrolling other people into you, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And what we're really looking at here is fascinating new ways. Both of you guys are great examples of doing this. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily ways that are mean or degrading.
Yeah. Now, there are elements of it that become ugly. And that happens anytime you have a totally free market. There's an ugly side of it where, for as much as I'm making a joke about how I want to game the system, the fact is I want to game the system, you know, and that's not a pretty thing.
But it's not unpretty to say I want to. Let me phrase it differently. You want to maximize your advantage in getting your book out there.
It's good.
Not the Leo.
I'm going to hire Leo.
And it doesn't necessarily hurt, but you're not hurting anybody. And so that's really the question that I have to ask, web lining or not, when I look at the ads that are for me on Facebook, the card for super fans, they know I'm a 49er fan, a retro iPhone doc, love. To who does this hurt that these ads, mature American women, are targeted a little bit more because it knows a little bit. Who does that hurt? Nobody.
I think it's a good question to segue to a break on.
Let's do a commercial targeted at you. He waved at me. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's for me.
How many of you waved? Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about Gazelle.com. This really is a targeted ad, and it's a great ad for everybody who watches any of our shows. You know about Gazelle, right? Gazelle is the place you go to get rid of all the junk, all the crap you've got in your drawers, in your closet. Everybody who's into tech collects old tech. It's just what happens. And what do? You know, you don't want to throw it in the trash. It's got value. Some of you may have the energy. I know Dan, our chat moderator, he sells all his stuff on eBay, but that's a lot of work, a lot of time.
Pain in the butt. Plus, also, can I just say real quick, we for some reason, we always get talking about the free market. Gazelle is a great example of purely from selfish desires. Yeah, they're doing really, really good things.
Mm-hmm. It's a great company.
Stuff gets recycled. Yeah. Stuff gets efficient.
When you think about this whole sector of the economy, the shared economy, the access economy, you have Neighbor Goods, Snap Goods, Zipcar, Buzzcar, Zim Rides, like all these tools are getting more return out of the capital already invested in a resource.
It's the efficiency.
Property, automobile,
it's the efficiency of the internet made real, and I love that.
But it's actually, there's something horribly uncapitalistic about everybody owning a car that sits idle for 20 hours a day.
Well, absolutely. And we'll talk about this. That's the promise of autonomous vehicles. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, we got to do the ad.
Yeah.
So you got an iPad 2. You know an iPad 3 is coming. Now, when the iPad 3 comes out, this is the first place you're going to go. You're going to take that 32 gigabyte Wi-Fi iPad, sell it for $280. You're halfway towards your new iPad. How do you like that? You can now, once you say okay, by the way, if it's in flawless condition, $320.
Nice.
They will take it. What's going to happen is you're going to get a box, any box. You're going to pile all this stuff in there.
I love piles.
I know. Well, it's in a pile right now in your drawer. Take it and put it in the box. Transfer the pile to the box. They will give you a mailing label. They take care of the shipping on anything worth more than a dollar. You ship it back to them. Now, here's the nice part. They have data experts who will, first of all, verify that it's in the condition you said it was. But they will wipe all the personal data out of there. So they will verify it. They will then send you a check. You can go to PayPal. They'll give you PayPal. Walmart gift card. They have lots of ways to get paid. The one I'm going to recommend, Amazon gift card. If you like to use Amazon, who doesn't? 5% more if you do it through Amazon.
Oh,
they basically
cool.
rebate the associate
idea.
Fee.
Yeah.
Isn't that smart?
It's great.
Yeah. So get paid with an Amazon gift card or cash if you want the cash. Mm. It's just a really fantastic way to take those gadgets. I'm going to add this to my box right here. Let's say Amazon gift card. Thank you very much. It's in flawless condition. And get all those gadgets and get cash for them. Now, if the gadget is worthless, and that sometimes happens, I've got an old BlackBerry Curve I'm not going to get much money for. Actually, let me just check. I don't know.
Look up my Casio E100.
Yeah,
from
I have
1993-30.
I can't believe this is worth anything. Yeah. So this is, see that button, recycle. So what they do is they do green recycling. It never goes into landfill, not one bit of it. It never goes offshore. It's handled appropriately by their green recyclers. And that way you're guaranteed, you could just throw this in the box. Since I've already got stuff of value in there, they're going to continue to pay the postage. I just love this. It is a great way to raise money for a charity. You can have a Gazelle charity page, a gadget drive. So if your baseball team wants to raise money, you can have a bake sale, but you could also have a gadget drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Gazelle.com. Keep it moving. That's the whole idea. I want you to go to gazelle.com. You don't even have to use it. Just find out what your stuff's worth and then decide. But I have a feeling once you see the hundreds of dollars it's worth, you're gonna take advantage of this. And again, remember the little tip I gave you. Use the Amazon gift card for 5% more. GAZELLE.com. Don't sell it.
Gazelle it.
Nice.
Wait, did you just make that up?
Yeah, not just.
Okay.
I was thinking all night.
Turning them into
it's
a verb.
Good. I like that.
Yeah.
I wonder what other uses of funds you could direct this to. Like you said, charities.
They do charities.
That's really. I was also.
Schools.
I was thinking about
Girl
local.
Scouts. Girl Scouts.
Areas like local businesses that are often feeling
totally
threatened and
totally.
Put upon by a lot of internet stuff. If some of them got together or there's some towns with their own currencies and said, we'll work with Gazelle, clean out
absolutely.
Your garages for all this crap, and it will become local dollars plus 5%.
Well, many local waste districts have electronics drives because people throw everything, including batteries, into the trash.
Yeah.
You're not supposed
it's
to do.
Apparently bad.
It's poison.
So
they have to have electronic recycling drives. This, they could just do it instead with Gazelle.
We had
a friend of ours in Germany. Their son stayed with us for a week, and he was horrified when we went to go throw batteries in the trash. He's like, you don't do that.
No.
Oh, that's horrible. He's got standards.
Yeah, exactly.
I confess I do because I don't know what else. What are you going to have a box?
Exactly.
Can you Gazelle batteries?
I put it in the recycling. Does
you know
count?
What? I don't know. Throw the batteries in anyway.
That's right.
Seriously.
Yes.
You
throw
may
the
have
batteries
just ruined
in.
Their car structure.
No, they don't care. They're nice guys. Seriously.
Car batteries
they believe in a green world. And that
the Toyota lithium batteries from the Prius.
Instead of,
I'm going to Gazelle it.
Instead of putting packing peanuts in there,
can I just
pack
send all my medals to them too?
Yeah.
Metal just like cans showing
tires.
It was a good run with Gazelle. I'm glad we had him as a sponsor for a while.
The day we sunk Gazelle.
Why are we getting all these batteries? Oh, Leo said it was okay. Let's see. The cell phone privacy bill. Representative Markey has released a draft of this.
Yeah.
You probably would like this idea since you're so private. The idea is called the Mobile Device Privacy Act. We give Congress such a hard time when they do things like SOPA and PIPA. Let's give them a little bit of praise when they do something smart.
So tell us more about this.
Later. All right. It would, for instance, force the cell phone carriers to disclose if they're using Carrier IQ. That was the software that was monitoring everything you do.
Right.
And what information the software is collecting. You would have to consent to any data collection or transmission. Third parties would have to have policies in place to secure the data. So not only do you have to give them permission, but they are required, if you do give them permission, to secure it so somebody can't steal it.
Well, and let's remember that about every 6 months we hear a story of credit card information, user account information, hundreds of thousands of people's stuff lost on a zip drive.
See,
that's a lot.
I don't know.
A USB stick.
Now, you're the free market libertarian.
I'm trying really hard.
He's from Texas.
So I'm trying to think of a situation where I would disagree with this bill, and it's a little bit tough. The only thing I'm going to knock on it is, like, having a law saying you need to protect information, it's like they don't want information to get out anyway. And if they – like, if you want to make a law – say what the penalty should be for if information gets lost, you know, hold them accountable.
Yeah.
Although even
I'm sure that there's penalties in it.
But even that sort of happens automatically. AT&T doesn't want to lose information. It's a major PR disaster when somebody steals a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe they don't really care.
This is a soft spot for me. I'm okay. Yeah. I'm okay with anyone who's pro privacy on people.
Well, I was impressed that Markey is a part of something in Congress called the Privacy Caucus. He's the head of that. And we do give our...
They wear matching jackets.
Hope they do.
It says don't ask.
But we do give our public elected officials a tough time when it comes to the internet. Like, learn the internet. You don't understand how anything works. So that always makes me a little cautious
and
when they try to do things.
Markey, though, is one of the smarter guys out there. I like Markey.
And there's just... We're technology always outpaces the law. This is the case of the law trying to keep pace in a way that is hopefully intelligent. And even if it doesn't become a law... There's power in the signal that they're sending, that we're paying attention, that this is important, that you don't just have willy-nilly ability to go do these things, and that we're trying to look out for our constituents, which it is our job to try to do, that maybe the market alone can't solve this. And so that's where you have policy and attempt to come in and sort this out.
Even a guy like Brian Brushwood must admit that we need government for some things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, in fact, the worst places on earth are the place where there's not enough government to enforce contract law or to protect the rights of individual citizens.
Just to make sure water is potable.
Yeah.
So iPhone.
Yes.
iPhone.
What about it? It is a thing.
You have one, right?
Oh, okay.
You're like, no, I'm Brian.
How many?
That's Baratunde.
I don't know why you're speaking
iPhone, we're human beings.
What nouns, Leo? You could use verbs and subjects. Yeah, I use an iPhone.
So I keep my iPhone on AT&T. Why? Because I have unlimited data, right? And I'm grandfathered in, right?
Yeah, same here.
Oh,
my God.
There.
Locked in forever.
Bad news.
Oh, no. Are they taking that away?
Well, no,
they
can't.
They're going to pry my data for my cold days.
They want to, but they can't because they kind of promised. So instead, what they're going to do is throttle you after you use 2 gigabytes.
Oh, no.
They're going to beat me?
Yes.
Some guy from AT&T is going to show up. Why, you little?
I'm throttling you. So this is actually, I've started to get a lot of email from listeners, a lot of email from people who've got this notice from AT&T where it says, you're in the top 5% of users and we are going to slow your access down until next month.
Well, okay, at least they're disclosing, which makes me slightly less enraged. I'm still enraged, though. It's like,
when is this going to take effect?
It already is in effect. The company said initially that they'd only throttle you if you were in the top 5% of users, and that would be 10 to 12 gigs.
But now they've lowered that all the way down to 2 gigs.
Well, I have been receiving email, and this article in Mac Rumors confirms it, from people who are getting that top 5% warning after reaching as little as 2 gigabytes.
Do you think they're fudging the numbers on who's top 5%?
I got to think that more than 1 in 20 people uses more than 2 gigabytes.
Absolutely.
More than 2 gigabytes?
Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah.
More than 2 gigabytes?
I'm actually looking it up
right now.
I mean, you realize, for example, there are times I'm out on the road and they'll send me the rough cut of Scam School every week to go over. And it's like just previewing that on my iPhone, that's what, 10%
You're
of my...
You're the problem.
That's 10% of my whole data, but it's a totally legitimate
use.
Why
are you driving up my prices, Brian?
Oh, God. Really?
Why?
Because I'm the 1%.
So here's the deal. 1% user. Let me see.
Since December 26th, I have used 1.4 gigabytes. So that's,
hey, where are you guys going? I don't even look at this stuff.
In under settings, general usage, cellular usage.
Since I reset it December 6th, so it's 2 months.
Oh, dear God.
I've used only 2 gigabytes.
There you go. Less than you thought.
Yeah.
All right, I don't care about this, man. There you go. Okay. Take that, Brian.
Sorry, guys.
Sorted.
Holy you are in the 5%.
What about you? Received 10.8 gigabytes.
What
sent
are you
megabytes.
Doing?
Throttle this guy.
Are you a mega upload trying to salvage all the user files?
Dude, I live
what
on the
are you
road.
Doing?
Since the
I'm
date. What's the date?
The
since when?
It says current period, 6 days, 5 hours. Lifetime.
No. Give me your phone. Give all me your right, phone.
Since how long?
Now I'm going to shut this off forever.
Jeez Louise.
Okay, no. This is okay.
Because it was like in a year.
This
or
is since October 14th,
okay.
2011.
Okay.
November, right, December,
but that's,
January.
That still has me like
at
4 gigs,
three
four
and a
gigs
half
a month.
Months.
Yeah.
It's still.
You're still over.
Just three,
still
three
over.
And a half, yeah.
He's the bad guy.
Wow, okay. That was pretty
scary.
We found the problem, AT&T.
Wow.
It's that dude.
His name is Brian Brushwood.
So I just, you know, this is. Are you surprised? This is what happened.
I consciously. Shift my data usage to the iPad,
right?
Because I've got unlimited there as well. And I've been international for a significant chunk of the past month. I was 2 weeks in India, and I didn't want to be using data over there on my phone.
I'll tell you what,
the per bit rate is much expensive. Higher on the phone than the iPad.
I don't want to say good, but I kind of want to say good, AT&T. I dare you to push this, and I will be out so fast. Because I think that's the only thing holding us there.
Where are you going to go?
I'm going to go.
Well, everybody throttles, but it's a lie that we have free,
unlimited data.
Yeah. Or whatever it is.
There's a lot of things in our society that are lies.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. I blame the marketers.
All right, what's another story?
Mega uploads, files deleted by Thursday.
You guys upset by the mega upload thing or not?
You know, I have to say.
We agree.
On the surface of it, they seem like they really were kind of.
Oh, no, they were total jerks. And in fact, a friend of mine, Andrew Main, creates a lot of Illusion DVDs. And the mega upload was pirating, you know, had them available. And he sent them takedowns. And they were very feet dragging.
Oh,
they
this
were,
is good.
They're genuinely lousy about it.
That's relevant because the thing that protects them is the fact that they have a DMCA takedown procedure, but they've got to stay.
You got to respond to it.
Right. There was a lot of lip service about it. But on the flip side, like, there's so much legitimate data. People are just going to get a lot.
Well, I think there's a connection between the throttling and the mega upload story. And that it is about data and it's about what's been promised and about what's possible. So the throttling, we were joking around. Doesn't really affect us. It does affect Brian.
Yes.
And we, you know, to adjust a promise after you've signed a contract.
Sure.
Right? And committed funds.
I agree.
Is dastardly.
That's wrong.
Dastardly. And, I've never used that word before.
Great word.
And I felt like doing it.
Dastardly.
And now I've done it.
The podcast.
So take
it. With Veritude Thursday.
That was dastardly. Dastardune Day. So in any sense.
Every time you say dastardly, the crowd goes wild.
I do think, you know, there is a signal that we don't have true competition because no one can offer it.
Absolutely. We
no
definitely.
No one really can offer that. And same in this mega upload case, you know, there are people who are going to lose their files. And you have to
legitimate
have
files, not pirated files.
You need a mega backup for the backup. You know, people have trusted their services. I'm sure if you read the fine print, it said if we're raided by people for doing things we shouldn't do, all your stuff's gone.
They say that. They say you should not keep your only copy on us. So two companies have been hosting for them in the U.S., Carpathia Hosting in Virginia.
Carpathia. Okay, so I don't know if this is common or not, but I read the Left Behind series, the stories of the Rapture, and this is a fictionalized account of the Book of Revelations, and the name of the Antichrist in this series
is Carpathia?
Nikolai Carpathia.
Yeah, I don't think that's... I think there's other meanings.
I'm just saying maybe mega upload files were hosted by the Antichrist.
By the devil. Why not?
That might be a reason to have some doubts about the sanctity of your data.
How much whiskey have you had over there? What is going on?
This is the worst rat hole I have ever gone down. Also, I don't know what you're going to make of this. The other company is Cogent Communications.
I read a book I just made up where Cogent was God.
But they lease servers to Mega Upload. They no longer have an obligation to preserve those servers. They're saying as soon as Thursday, we're just going to erase those drives and start over. And by the way, do not contact us. Contact Mega Upload.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
I mean, I guess all we could take from this is a lesson. Like, I mean, none of us are really. I don't see how this could have gone any other way.
Trust not the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lesson. Hopefully, we'll look back at this weird period of time on the internet where it's like, yeah, remember when all your stuff could just disappear? That was weird. You know, for like 7 years where we didn't actually pay attention, where we didn't take backups and redundancy seriously, where we didn't demand a level of accountability from our service providers and an enforcement of the promises they made us as paying customers. And we'll look back at this and like, yeah, that was a dark time in the web where we had no certainty about anything and we didn't care until we lost it all.
Yeah.
By the way, the Carpathian Mountains is a range of mountains forming an arc roughly 1,500 kilometers long across Central and Eastern Europe. It is not the Antichrist.
You have not proven that at all. You just stated facts. They were not an absolute rebuttal to my assertion. You also didn't read the full Wikipedia, which I haven't finished editing yet.
You should add that line at the end. And
also home of the Antichrist.
Home of the Antichrist.
I'd also like to point out that Viggo the Carpathian was the bad guy from Ghostbusters 2.
That's right. Viggo the Carpathian.
Not a coincidence.
Did you get that from the chat room?
No. I was just
you actually got that from your head.
I looked it up on Wikipedia to make sure.
Someone in the chat room did point out megaretrieval.com for those. This is the EFF's effort to help those who had
good for them.
Files with this company retrieve them. So megaretrieval.com, EFF sponsored site. If you have been caught up in the copyright wars and in the aggressive deletion of data, not all copyright infringing.
So Carpathia is working with them.
You should check out. I don't know if they're working.
No, yeah, it says Carpathia has created this website to assist users in contacting the EFF. That's interesting. Well, I love the EFF. I donate to them every month, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, no, EFF, ACLU, like, these are critical organizations.
Well, let's talk about something that was very controversial and became a big cause célèbre on Facebook, and then we're talking about the Susan G. Komen Foundation. We'll do that in just a minute, but first a word from our friends at Citrix, who make GoToMeeting, the ultimate in online collaboration software. You know, for years, GoToMeeting has had the fastest, easiest, most secure screen sharing solution out there. Now they've got video too, HD faces. They've just added it, and it is incredible. It makes such a difference to be able to see the person you're meeting with, whether it's a new client, a colleague that you don't get together with very often, to see their faces, their reactions. It's actually how we as humans work. We make connections face-to-face. And GoToMeeting with HD Faces really brings that to the online world. All it takes is a webcam and a click, and you'll be collaborating in HD video like that. You'll see your attendees eye-to-eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected. It's great for training, for me. We don't do a meeting, a teleconference, without having GoToMeeting running. Well, that's one of the nice things about it, by the way. It gives you a teleconference bridge. You could use VoIP or phone. So that's part of the setup, so you do hear people. And if they've got a camera, you see them too. You could try this. You don't have to take my word for it. You could try it absolutely free. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the orange Try It Free button and use the offer code TWIT. If you want to know more while you're at the site, just run the video on HD video conferencing. I'll vouch for it. This is how high quality
it is.
Tell
you what, if you want to know one reason to definitely involve faces is how many people have been on a meeting that goes 30, 40 minutes, you're so tuned out.
Oh, yeah.
People are talking,
well,
and really you're playing Bejeweled or whatever.
That's really true. Email,
it's like now at least you know they're engaged. They'll probably shorten the length.
Mowing the lawn I don't have.
Exactly. Playing Tetris. So that's exactly.
Don't go to meeting because then you'll bust me sitting there
building roads and infrastructure for America. I do a lot of things while I'm on conference calls.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm just trying to help this.
Are you an AmeriCorps?
Liar.
Such a liar. GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 30 days unlimited use free. I'm telling you, until you've tried it, you will not realize how incredible this is. GoToMeeting.com. I've seen this story peripherally on my Facebook page. People very upset. The Susan G. Komen Foundation is the breast cancer, you know, the, what do they call it? The Walk for the Cure and all of that.
The Pink Ribbon.
The Pink Ribbon,
folks.
Pink
Ribbon is there.
And, of course, because of that, really become beloved among women, and people care about women.
Yeah.
But they made an announcement that they were going to pull funding from Planned Parenthood.
Did they announce it, or did it just come out that they were pulling?
They announced it. They had made the decision a few months ago, revealed the decision earlier this week.
So on Tuesday, they said that their new funding criteria would restrict grants set aside for Planned Parenthood. These grants were to provide mammograms, which is absolutely critical in the detection and treatment of breast cancer, which is their cause for women, low-income women. Planned Parenthood said it happened because they were getting pressure from anti-choice groups.
Right. So, and they had carved out this rule about basically we can't give money to groups under investigation. If you look at all the groups they deal with and all the way that rule could have been written, it only applied to Planned Parenthood. It's one group out of the many that they deal with. And so it looked very political. I don't, in this show, necessarily want to get into the deep, deep politics.
No, and that's not tech. But tech is how they literally 4 days later reversed their decision based entirely on Facebook and Twitter.
And they got slammed in their reaction from all spheres. And it was, you know, I think Komen had done a pretty great job brand-wise of avoiding some of the hot-button political turmoil around women's health in the country in general.
It's tricky.
And had been supported by people from all sorts of political stripes. When they made this announcement, they inserted themselves into a major culture war and incited another side in so doing, which was saying, well, if you're committed to reducing breast cancer among women, how could you take this funding? Planned Parenthood, also bolstered by social media, was funded heavily in reaction to this. Mayor Bloomberg wrote them a check for $250,000 and tweeted about how we have to maintain support for access to these screening processes among women who don't have access to it.
So it just shows the power, though, social media to pick up on a story quickly.
Here comes Mr. Brushwood.
Well, no, first of all, I think this is a good story because it was an explosive showdown. And in the end, you know, they reversed their decision. Right. But there's something about when the internet gets its panties in a wad and they can't let go of it.
I was just waiting for the witch hunt, you know?
It's GoDaddy SOPA all over again. Mm. Like, they're like, GoDaddy, you support SOPA.
Didn't GoDaddy deserve that?
Well, but then once they fully reversed their decision and did exactly what everybody asked them to do, they're like, yeah, but you're still, I hate your ads so much. It was the same thing with the Susan G. Komen. They reversed their decision. They did what they wanted. They're like, yeah, but you're still jerks because you don't like Planned Parenthood.
Well, let's put it on a personal level. Mm-hmm. If you did something dicky.
That's already, I don't believe this.
And I said, Brian, that was a really lousy thing to do.
Right.
And you said, oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I stopped. I might still hold it against you for a little while.
Yeah.
Because you had the initial dicky impulse.
Right, but then that would make you a dick.
I'm wearing a dicky, so it's okay.
I love this is getting personal. I mean, I love it a lot.
No, I don't think isn't that normal human behavior to hold it against you for a little bit?
Once you make a correction, once you do what it is.
It doesn't make it all right.
But it changes it to where now you're the, like if I say to my daughter, you got to clean your room, your room's messy, and she cleans it up, and then I'm like, yeah, your room was messy though, and that was kind of, you're kind of bad, because you used to have a messy room.
Well, there's degrees. But let's say you murdered somebody.
Okay.
And then you said you were sorry. Am I supposed to say, see, the Christian thing to do is to say, oh, he's repented. He's okay. But some people might not be really great Christians and might say, you're an asshole.
Right. Well, look.
You murdered somebody, and even though you apologized, I'm not going to forgive you.
I'm going to drink now.
We've gotten to murder.
But that's the point is it's not necessarily a messy room. It's somewhere in between murder and a messy room.
Well, and I'll tell you, I felt
that's the name of the show. Between murder and a messy room.
It is Planned Parenthood.
I'm just saying that I understand why, after all that backlash, people don't necessarily immediately forgive.
Still upset.
I haven't forgiven GoDaddy. I think that was a cynical retraction on their part. I think they did support SOPA, and then they realized, oh, it's going to hurt us. Oh, let's cynically retract it. I'm still not forgiving them.
Right.
Susan G. Komen, I haven't really decided. I have to read more about that.
Yeah.
Actually, the backlash really is now against their vice president, who apparently makes a huge amount of money. So there's more to this story. I think it's human immediately.
If it is human, then we're getting back to an argument you and I had earlier in the show, Brian, about the way things are versus the way things should be.
Right.
And so in this case,
now
we're talking
I'm
about
the idea. Yeah, right. Can't you guys just let it go?
Good Christian.
Get what you want.
You're a good Christian.
We should be more forgiving.
That's
and I'm
fine.
Like, but we're not. But we should be. But we're not.
We should be. But we're not. Hey, let's talk about the Super Bowl. It's coming up in just a few minutes.
Never heard of it.
It's already started? All right, this show's over. This is the first Super Bowl that has been streamed by the NFL.
We should like propose like the most idiotic ideas ever.
No one will hear it.
Nobody's watching anymore. No. Actually, a lot of geeks.
So then when I killed the hobo.
Hobos deserve to be killed.
Me in the eye.
I can't do it. I can't.
Come on,
do what I started.
Super Bowl is being streamed for the first time. Big deal. Now, if you're on a mobile platform.
It actually is a big deal. And there's also a giant crackdown on all the illegal streams.
307 sports-related domains have been seized by the feds 16 of them allegedly engaged in streaming.
There
the rest
is.
Accused of selling fake merchandise. And see, now I liked what the guy in charge of Rovio, Angry Birds guy, said.
Okay.
Because I tell you, you walk down the streets of any major city and you'll see Angry Birds hats. You know those are not approved.
Like authorized.
Those are not. Yeah. They didn't go to Rovio. It's like, can I have the license to make this hat?
I'm sure they're making some money.
May I have a license to advertise your product?
Well, that's what the guy at Rovio said. He says, I don't have a problem with that. That's free publicity. Yeah. You know, we license stuff. We try to do, you know, but I am not going to go around and find everybody who's making Angry Birds hats and try to put them out of business.
Let me add another twist to it, which is sports teams are such a part of the society. And people feel an ownership over them well more than Angry Birds because they have the city's name on them. Because they use public funds to subsidize their stadiums and get all these preferential bonds and financing deals.
I agree.
To lure these teams to towns and make an excuse to get rights of public way and things like that. So it's not just some private enterprise. The league exists as a testament to this idea of like American civilization and culture and the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants and the
Patriots. It is not really.
But I think, but when you look at the funds that the public funds that do go to support it, it's not fully
corporate welfare. I believe.
Oh my God, it's the worst. It's the worst corporate welfare.
So you're going to demand that the citizens like fork over cash to build you a stadium, but you're going to prosecute them for supporting the team that resides in that stadium.
Well, so here's the difference this year over previous years. Yeah. If I had heard this story last year, I'd be all up in arms and angry about it, the taking down of all those domains that are illegally streaming.
Oh, the streaming
but
stuff.
But because this is the first year that there is a legitimate stream, then I'm kind of okay with that. I still think it's douchey on behalf of the NFL. Like, what's the matter? You guys don't have enough eyeballs on the freaking Super Bowl. You need to shut all these down.
I agree with you. As soon as iTunes started selling music, I was much less okay with pirating music.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yep.
So I feel the same way.
But I'll tell you, there is a lot of emerging spaces where the needs and wants and desires of the customer are not being met. And you can't get angry when piracy occurs to fill a lack of service.
Yeah. So when the Beatles or the Rolling Stones won't let their stuff be sold digitally, I don't really feel too bad.
They're telling people, find it.
Well, and it's
they're basically saying steal this record
in a less you know screw you kind of piracy. You have like to me a real gray area is bootlegs is bootlegs of a concert of Grateful Dead you know of this particular performance at this date. There are people who love to collect every single bit of those, and they're just not available.
They're just collectors. They are not people who would have bought it otherwise. Yeah. They're hoarders.
Digital hoarders. And just to clarify, like, I think I'm with you on the streaming. I was talking particularly about the merchandising and the cracking down of these unauthorized sales of paraphernalia, but the streaming, especially if their streaming is good, one, they should just win in the market.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
They should just be naturally
better. Well, except they're
better.
Probably stealing the stream from NFL.com and rebroadcasting, right?
Do you think so?
Or they've got a camera aimed at a TV set.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like, I went through this recently. I had a bit of a moral conundrum because I wanted to see the new episodes of Sherlock on the BBC.
Oh,
the first season was
me
amazing.
Too.
Yeah. They're not going to be here in America for 3 more months.
Right.
And so, and meanwhile, there's BitTorrent, but then there's also the BBC iMovie player has them all streaming. But you go there, they're like, "Oh, sorry, you're in the States, aren't you?
One of our colonies."
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but then
that's what you get for going free.
I used a VPN to pretend I'm from London, and all of a sudden it played instantly. So it's like,
so now you're a British loyalist.
Yes, of course.
But interesting. Okay,
I'm gonna pay my taxes.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate because in Britain, that production, it's a BBC One production, was financed by license fees from people in Britain.
Right.
Of which you are decidedly not.
The
Mr.
people
US
pay.
Okay, I'm mostly
and you want a free
England.
Ride. You want a free
Culturally?
Ride on all the people in the UK who paid their TV license fees. You're a free rider.
But, I can't deny that.
The answer is BBC offer it so we can buy it, we won't be free. Give us a chance to pay for
weirdly,
it.
Weirdly, like, I felt dirty. I got as far as installing the BitTorrent and starting to download it, and I felt dirty about that. And so then I switched over to the VPN, and I felt less bad because they're still getting the view. They're still showing the advertisements.
That's a good point.
So the only thing is that my body is physically not located in London.
And there are two differences. There's the cost of that stream is incrementally probably low.
I mailed 2 pennies to the government.
But if they offered it, and why can't they offer it? Probably some legal thing that doesn't acknowledge the network world we live in.
They have started making iPlayer global. I mean, but I think this is, you're right. There may be some issues there. Yeah. And that's one of the problems, that we don't have a global structure to make this possible.
One
and that's really what
government.
We need to be.
Man, don't you, now you're bringing it.
Wait a minute. We're getting that. It's called Facebook. They've got a currency.
No, I do. I think about websites as different citizenships. Yeah. And it's like there are certain things like I just don't want to be bothered to have to give another login and become a citizen of yet another social network. That's part of the reason I've been dragging my feet on Path. I know everyone's using Path and loves it, but I'm just like,
not everyone. 2 million people, to be precise.
2 million. They've doubled since they relaunched 2 months ago. I'm one of them, and I love it. That's where you'll find a picture of my son's underwear.
That means you just made people not want to sign up for Path. You just lost.
You ought to see my son.
This is really uncomfortable.
I'm so uncomfortable. In fact, this would be a good time to wrap this thing up and go watch a football game. Baratunde Thurston's new book, How to Be Black, is everywhere you want it. Go to the bookstore, buy it, download it from Amazon, make it number one, and whatever you do, go visit the website, howtobeblack.me.
And for those in the Bay Area, I'm going to do a Whiskey Friday meetup this Friday.
Are you going to stick around? February 10th.
Good. I'll come back. I'm going to be like Schwood.
How many miles are you going to put on? Do you know?
I flew 150K last year, but I'm going to be doing it at Whiskey Thieves in the Tenderloin on Geary. Fantastic. Around 5:30 p.m. Bring your books. I'll sign them.
Oh, that's great. Friday, Whiskey Thieves, 5:30. Baratunde Thurston. Go see him. Drink some whiskey with him. He's a great guy to have.
And that's Friday, February 10th. Like, 10th. Don't go to the wrong Friday and be mad.
Oh, that's
because you listened to the podcast 2 weeks
late. Did you get the date right? February 10th.
Did I get the
date right? Let's see, 4:30. Yes, you did.
Math, it's kind of my...
Is that your thing?
It was.
For winners.
Math is for winners.
Math is for winners.
So thank you, Leo, for having me. Oh, it's Baratunde. Really a pleasure.
I just always love having
to join Mr. Schwood.
And it's a reprise of their great appearance some moons ago.
Yeah, Ryan, that's
Rushwood.
Right.
You stick around because we're going to do Game On in just a little bit. We're a little early on Twit, so take your time. Enjoy some pizza.
We've
got a keg of beer. We got more whiskey.
I'm going to write my book, How to Be Pink.
There's a football game on as well. Thank you all for being here. Normally, we do the show 3 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC or 2800 UTC. I don't know. 8 plus 12 plus 3 is...
Math.
Not 2300. It's 11 p.m. In the UK. How about that? Do tune in live. But if you can't, you should download it from twit.tv. And all our shows are available both in audio and high quality video. This show is available in HD as well. Anything else I need to say? We don't have a week ahead because you and Eileen is back from Hawaii. Eileen and Tom were in Hawaii. Good to have you back. We missed you.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
You know, I should point
you
out
you want
that,
to plug something?
Well, yeah, because I really am. I'm serious about trying to scam Amazon. And so I want to, if
do
you want to
March
wanna be,
1st.
If you, March 1st is will be the release date. Go to schwood.com/books. That's schwood.com/books. And you can sign up and be part of the... It'll be like Ocean's 1 million. We'll all go in and scam Amazon on the same day.
I'm in too. I'll tweet and you sit, tell me what to tweet that
and the
day.
Book is called How to Be Pink?
Yeah. It's the Scam School book. And we've got a bunch of enhanced features in there. I'm really excited.
Although you
about
could
it.
Write How to Be Pink.
I'm very pink.
Yeah. It's not easy being pink. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I hope you have a great game. We'll see you next time
This
on
is
Twitter.
Amazing.